Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down real low. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Football is back, and we have you covered each weekday afternoon on OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Some of the best football guests, from Armando Salguero and John McClain to Trey Wallace and Bobby Carpenter, plus the top headlines and reaction to the college football and NFL weekends.
The Chiefs go for dynasty mode with Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Andy Reid.
They're the favorite, right?
Yeah, they have to be. The AFC goes through Arrowhead, but the Bengals and Jets, they're all in to reach Vegas. And the Bills and Dolphins are also confident. Withrow, what about college football?
Can you say three-peat? That's what they're hoping to say in Athens, Georgia, as the Bulldogs continue their march to college football dominance, while a cast of usual characters led by Michigan, Ohio State, and Bama nip at their heels.
There's plenty of craziness on a week-to-week basis. Pull up to the bar with us each weekday afternoon. We're streaming live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern across the OutKick Network. Podcasts available everywhere, and always check out OutKick.com.
NFL and college football covering your favorite teams. OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our monthly bonus There Will Be Dungeons episode. We do these every month for supporters of the Pod People support system we have over at therewillbedungeons.com. And if you're hearing this and you're not part of that, you're getting it late, like way late. Those who sign up for it get it the day we record it, which is right now, July 27th. A lot of you are getting it in August. So why not be like those July people and sign up and get it early? We're going to dive right in. The way this thing works is Kristen has a big list of questions you guys have sent in through various methods since we last spoke, and we're going to answer those questions right here on the air. So, Kristen, without any further ado, take it away.
Will do. First off, I want to thank everybody for sending the questions this month. We have so many. We're going to try and bust through as many as we can, but okay. Thank you. There's some really great questions. All right, some warm-up stuff. Fast, furious, or slow and steady, answer however you'd like. Bo, how often does the group bypass or ignore something you've planned for, as is tradition? For example, my group average is 3 out of 5.
Often enough, I suppose.
Well, what's that mean? Tell us, like, give us a thing.
Give us, yeah, a number, a ratio.
Yeah. And does it make you feel bad that we've skipped it or missed it?
Doesn't make me feel bad whatsoever. But I'd say about 50% of the time.
Oh, wow. Ooh. 50, 50, geez.
Damn.
Okay.
Need to work on that.
Yeah.
Well, no. Put that number down.
I've got to anticipate what you guys do, but at the same time, I'm perfectly happy with you doing whatever.
All right.
Scott, did Nash actually ever mine for anything in the solar mines? Sounds like he just read books and watched movies. And why is he so angry?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. I'm not going to say why he's so angry, because we may eventually get to it. But his time in the solar mines was spent basically slaving and exposing himself to horrendous amounts of radiation to try to capture the sun's rays through some really old solar panels, gathering solar energy for those who wanted to exploit it for reasons he was not aware of. But he was like many who were forced to work in those conditions. If you worked in the solar mines, most of you would eventually just die of radiation poisoning and or some sort of cancer at a young age. And let's just say things kind of came to a head at one point, and that's why Nash got out of there. But yeah, it's a place where there are times when they think that you're important, and they give you all access to all these things that he has access to and that he talks about, but it's all just sort of a ruse to keep able-bodied people around to, you know, take these horrendous rays of radiation for a higher class of people who are unwilling to do it themselves. That's the most I've ever said about it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Also, John, it's a Walmart.
Would you say it's a Walmart?
Yeah.
With solar panels.
I mean, maybe. It might be an old Walmart. I don't know.
John, how strong on a scale of 1 to 10 is Stanley's consideration of a cleric multiclass?
I'd say a 5 at this point.
I think I'm coming to terms with the fact that healing isn't only about healing, and there was definitely a draw to be a cleric, to be able to do a little bit better healing for the group, but I think I've found a niche there. But I do think that there's some cool story stuff in Stanley's background that encourages this as a path for him. I kind of designed him to be on a knife's edge of being a good person or a bad person, and figured he would just kind of gravitate towards whatever the party did, or as a counter to it, depending on what the party did. And so we'll see where it goes. Right now he's trying to be a good person, and he's doing an okay job at it, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Fantastic. Kyle, what thematic boss fight final moves? Oh, with thematic boss fight final moves in mind, what would Varel's preferred death blow against a Weirlord be?
Okay, I hope that the Eye of Grojil evolves with me, because the fire shield does awesome damage. I hope one day I can choose which weapon it appears as, so I can summon at will various types and be like a master of all. Sword one moment, switch it over to a flame hammer, and then back into a shield. If I can't do that, I hope Bo will let me turn the shield into a buzzsaw that spins, and I get to go right into its chest, Doom style, and take it out that way, and then like punch it in the face.
I think maybe that can be done now. I don't know if it would do extra damage, but you could probably spin it.
Yeah.
It's
sweet. If not, it would be a shame if you didn't, though, because given the world we live in, not having a, you know, full-blown freaking, you know, shredding device like that would be sad. Like, would that, it can't just be a sword or a, you know, it has to be something crazy in this world. So I think that would be great.
I think the fun part about the Eye of Grojil is that it's part of Varel. It's not it's a weapon, but it's not a weapon. It's him.
Right.
It's of him. Which is, yeah. I feel like, in line with what Varel, with Kyle's philosophy is for, is lizard folking.
So do you, follow up here. Do you mean to do that with almost all the characters have something that's part of them that's significant? So in my case, you gave me this heart, this dragon heart. And his case, the Eye of Grojil, and Stanley's case, a whole nother character.
Stanley hasn't found his demonic artifact. So yes, I constructed an artifact for each of you with that in mind as a way to, because leveling your character isn't the only way to have fun mechanics and things to do in the game and have something specially meaningful. So everyone did make one for everyone. We haven't gotten Stanley's yet. His Diantalus thing was a mishap caused by a side adventure that it was completely random. It had nothing to do with anything in terms of the main story, but now is part of it.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
Sorry, I turned into Diantalus, but yes, everyone has a custom item.
All right.
Everything turns
into
a
spaceship. It's the spaceship for Stanley. That is the platform I am standing on.
Yep.
And then one for me, how did Kristen perfect her Australian accent? It's great. I watched a lot of Mad Max and then a lot of early Mel Gibson interviews. And I know there's still quite a bit I'm figuring out about hitting Australian a bit more fluently. But yeah, just watching and copying what they say. All right, cool. So thank you all for the work.
No, I have mad respect for that, because when we did our little like one-off, I wanted to have a cool ending where everybody met like weird counterparts to who their There Will Be Dungeons character is. And it turns out none of them talked, but like I was prepared to have interactions for all of them. So I spent literally that entire day trying to do an Australian accent. And it was abysmal. And I was like, please don't let anybody talk to, I think her name was Faith in that game. Mm-hmm. I was like, please don't let anybody talk to Faith. Please don't let anybody talk to Faith. It's just not going to work. Yeah. So I've got nothing but respect for being able to pull off the accent as well as you do.
Whenever I try to do an Australian accent, it devolves into a like an Irish pirate. It's not good.
Right. Well, I mean, Scottish and Irish, those two blend together so well.
Sure. But I'm trying for Australian and I end up going, yarr, there's a pot of gold at the end of me rainbow. Like, I can't do it.
I'm supposed to put the shrimps on the Barbie.
Yeah, but like then you're just, you know, Paul Hoganing it, which is no good. Nobody wants to be Paul Hogan.
This next question is for everybody. What was the process of creating your characters? Was it all generated on some kind of software, or was this done all by rolling the dice? And how much of your own input was used in the process?
Well, I mean, geez,
I think you guys all had complete... We did the paper process. We used D&D Beyond to help with the character sheets playing over the internet. But everyone came up with their own characters and did the die rolling. I think we didn't use a, is there a computer? I guess maybe they're talking about Charactermancer and Roll20 or something like that. There are some ways to generate characters that take a lot of it out of your hands, mm-hmm. right? And they it's not the character you envision or want to play. It's like, here are the roles, but also here are the Cyberpunk 2020 game is quite like that, where like you roll for what your history is. Like whether you had a significant relationship event in your 18th year and then in your 19th year, you got in trouble with the law. Like it actually, your background is generated by the character creation. So you don't pick it.
Right.
And so we didn't do any of that. And we didn't, so it was completely, I would say, created by the players.
Yeah, and that includes John's one-off, I think, as far as I know, everybody did too. I mean, we use D&D Beyond to sort of maintain everything, but that's just taking the place of a notebook and, you know, there's some nice automated features and lots of cool stuff. There's a reason why it's so rad, but it doesn't do it for you.
There's nothing wrong with that. Like, especially for the new player boxes, they do include pre-gen characters. And a DM could totally say, here are the four characters. Each pick one that you want to play. Those are the characters you have to play. Yeah. That's a way to do it.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think we all knew what kind of class and race we wanted to play. And it was simply plugging in the numbers based on what our class required of us, and then what the other roles were kind of then affected how the characters grew.
Yeah.
That's all that right. One.
And then this one, I definitely saw there was quite a bit of conversation around this week. So a question for the whole group. You guys are some of the least loot-crazed players I've ever come across. Was this a conscious decision to keep the show from devolving into 3 hours of comparison shopping, or just something you all share by coincidence? And Bo, does that trait of theirs affect how you craft the world?
I would say it's not their trait. I think they are all video gamers that love their loot. I know I said on Core this week that Diablo should remove loot from the game, and then John was furious. he gave me credit for having a well thought out idea, but generally speaking, they do like loot. It's more of a product of me that the world is a Mad Max world. So the way I see it is that, you know, useful items are very rare and they're guarded preciously. Like a useful item might be just like a pipe, you know, like a precious brass pipe. I mean, they're so rare. They're so useful for plumbing. So that would be really important. So yeah, it's more the fact that, one, it's a Mad Max world. Two, I also suck at loot tables. I'm just, when it comes to prepping, I get to the loot table and I'm like, eh, I'll figure it out when we play. And then I just don't think about how we play. So it's a combination of the two, I would say.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get a lot of people mad we didn't pick up those rifles.
Oh, but yeah, chat was already going about the rifles.
Yeah, but I have no interest in it.
No,
like
that's
the problem is Stanley doesn't use guns. He doesn't. He might be good at them, but he's never tried. He's not interested in it. And, you know, I designed Stanley, I've said, as my own personal rebellion to being in a Mad Max world. So he's going to use fantasy weapons. He's going to use swords and magic and stuff like that. And you give him a machine gun and he's going to be like, I don't want that. I'll walk away. Bo would have to make a strong case to convince him to kind of jump on the other side of that spectrum. So yeah, he sees high-tech rifle and is just like, that's beyond me. I'm not going to deal with that.
Yeah, I love loot as much as the next guy. And, you know, in a video game context, it sort of depends on the game. So I'm replaying Pillars of Eternity 2 right now. And it's a lot like D&D, or a lot like our campaign anyway. There may be a bunch of things dropping, but all of it is either vendor trash or sort of duplicates of what you already have. So a lot of, you get in a fight with a bunch of guys with muskets, all those muskets have the same stats on them. If you can carry them, great, because you can sell them. But we don't really have a vibrant sort of market thing happening with our campaign. So there's no big reason to fill your pockets full of this stuff. Like,
if you fill your pockets, where are you going to go sell it? Everyone's poor and it's desolate, and yeah, they might like it, but they don't have gold to give you.
Right.
Most people, yeah.
But I feel like Bo, on the flip side, I don't feel like Bo has been stringent this way. He has always rewarded each of us with something major when we've done something amazing. Like, you know, whatever that item might be. In my case, I mean, the dragon heart was the greatest thing ever, and it didn't come as a piece of loot off some dead body, but you know, I think that satisfaction of I got a cool thing still happens in our campaign. It's just not from, you know, a bunch of dead lizards.
Yeah, it's more story based, which means it can flow better. And also, you're right. I mean, we've also got carrying capacities that we have to adhere to. And I know Stanley has the bag of holding now, but does Hope know what a bag of holding is? No, she has no clue what it is, and she's never asked about it.
When you
all
say
she
it that
knows
way,
is what she can carry, and that's about it.
I have the highest carrying capacity, and I don't carry anything. So this could all be my fault.
Character choice, right?
No. But I mean, like, even little things like usual tables have rolls for gold and gems. Like, literally everything you kill in a regular campaign probably gives you some amount of gold and gems. And there's, you can go to dungeon sites or different sites that loot generate just to do it for you. And I'm like, nobody's got gold and gems. Like, in this, like, who's got that stuff? You know, like, so, yeah. There isn't a lot of it.
Yeah, and then, of course, too, we're not leveling by XP. It's all, not
it's milestone.
Milestone-based, yeah. So a lot of that classic stuff kind of gets thrown out the window. And honestly, I think it works really well with the campaign setup, this Mad Max, because it does have to be different. It's not a green, vibrant, foresty fantasy world.
Not yet, anyways.
Yeah, I guess it's purpley now with eyeballs.
It's a purpley eyeball.
Purpley eyeball.
I mean, you know, as we level up and you go beyond the mundane, you may go to kingdoms who do things differently.
Yeah. And then this one is a fun one. What is the moment in the entire campaign so far that made you go, what the hell is going on? Or it got a little too weird?
The duck penis?
Lizard Game of Thrones. Yeah, or the duck penis.
That was just today.
In the campaign. In the campaign. That's just RL stuff between all of us.
Yeah.
I know Lizard Game of Thrones is my answer. That was the moment where I was like, what?
Oh, yeah, it's interesting. On? I remember when I first heard it, I was like, wait a minute, really? Oh my gosh, we're going to do Lizard Game of Thrones. I ended up really liking it in the end, though. But at first it was like, it was such an obvious reference, or it felt like such an obvious reference. I was like, uh-oh, are we going to, is the eighth season of Game of Thrones going to be year two of, you know, I didn't know where we were going with it, but I ended up really liking everything about it. In fact, I've loved everything about the lizard bits. Lizard bits, everything about the lizard story and lizard folk stuff and Varel's journey has been some of my favorite in the game. And that stuff I would include in that now. But at first it was like, oh my gosh.
His anus speech today was pretty great.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It's funny.
I mean, there's times when things just go off the rails and you don't know they're going to, but I don't know.
Kyle, your answer is Pixie Hulks.
Oh yeah. No. And we thought we had cornered him, and now all of a sudden, and then the Vorkhemoth got high off its ass and ate everybody but me. Like, there were some crazy moments. I know I've also had my face just accused of being completely blown, but I don't remember those
face?
Particular. Yeah, because there are multiple moments where Bo has been right like, Kyle's face right now is just. And I don't remember those.
Oh, sometimes you're just like, it's either you're enraptured or you're like, it's just, maybe that's not what you're intending, but you're like, I don't trust this. Like, this something's wrong. And I'm always, sometimes I'm sensitive to it because I notice it. I'm like, uh-oh.
It was the leprechaun.
Yeah, I think there was a moment.
I love the coin, but a leprechaun. A crater made by a dragon's corpse.
But wasn't there a point?
Well, he was really unlucky, and it landed on the unlucky leprechaun.
It's a wasteland setting. The last thing I ever expected to run into is a leprechaun.
Right. Well, we're still playing D&D, so I'm like, I'm flipping through the monster manual. I'm like, oh, leprechauns. We should be one. Like, I can't always be stuck to being like, what actually fits in this world? Sometimes I'm just like, whatever. This is going in.
Yeah, which is fine. I've kind of liked that weird clash most of the time. But yeah, I really can't think of a moment where I was just like, "Oh, are we seriously going here?" Like I haven't really had that. Really.
I mean, mine happens not in the show. It happens when I'm coming up with stuff, right? And I'm like, "Oh, am I really doing this?" I'm like, "Yeah, I guess I am." And I have that all the time. That's like, I'm like, I don't know. I think maybe when you guys really got spotted in Trashburg,
yeah,
and I had to throw the entire city at you while you ran, I was like, I guess I really have to do this. I kind of thought it was going to be a fun Metal Gear Solid thing, and you guys are going to sneak around. This is going to sound really bad. Please don't take insult, but I sometimes give you too much credit for accomplishing things that clearly you're not able to do, and it could be a fault of mine. It's not a criticism.
Right.
I'm just like, no, they'll get through. This is trivial.
Yeah,
I'm almost worried it's going to be too hard, and then you derp into the light, and then I got to send the whole town after you, and I'm like, oh, I guess I have to actually send the whole town after you.
I mean, we don't know the end result of what's happening with the Shaft of Light from today's episode, but something tells me we're doing that again, where we're missing either something obvious or a clue or something that would make all this make more sense and sooner than it will normally. I mean, would you say?
I mean, I'll say this just because it's there's like mysteries, and then there's sometimes just stuff that's obtuse that maybe I don't realize it is from your perception, right? Because it makes sense in my head, I know it all, but your perception is you have missing pieces, so you're trying to put things together. And I think the light was just intended to show you that there was more beneath, and you had to find your way down, but there are no exits in the room you're in.
Oh, okay. So
the conclusion I wanted you to draw was, there's got to be a secret room in here, right? And I'm like, there are worms. And you're like, I'll follow the worms outside. And I'm like, no, wrong way.
Well, you know, just in case they were going into a hole in the wall.
That doesn't mean like, oh, we're dumb as players. It's like, it's just as much on me to make sure I'm providing the right kind of hints.
Yeah, but I think that heartens me, because I think that Hope was on the right track. Like, she was doing.
Yeah, she was definitely on the right track. And I was trying to drop the little wormy hints here and there. But yeah, it's just, I don't even know what the point of what I was saying was. It's just that it's a two. It's like as much on me as it is on everyone else when like something's just obtuse.
Right. But
the light, sorry, Scott, the light is meant to show that there's more beneath. There's deeper to go.
Okay, interesting. It did feel like one of those levels in an RPG where I was just like, wait a minute, am I backtracking? Where did I go? I thought I saw this. Wait a minute, what does this mean? Like, I was actually having
those feelings.
And
there's a ladder in the back corner the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Stuck below.
Yeah. Yeah, that feeling of the ladder you missed the whole time. I hate that feeling. But it's fun in this context because we're, you know, this is different. Video games are deliberate and you have to be able to finish them and whatever. This could go a thousand ways and Bo could change it all in a second anyway. And it's,
I enjoyed that you decided to throw corpses into the light, though. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was cool. Well, that's what brought on the duck stuff. So it's your fault, really.
I don't think of that stuff. I'm just like, there'll be a light. They'll instantly get that it goes deeper into the earth and they have to keep looking. Like, what's the light made out of? Let's throw stuff in it.
I thought maybe it was a teleporter or something.
Yeah,
it
seemed like a portal.
Yeah, I didn't think of it, because when you know all the answers, you just assume incorrectly as a DM. Like, you assume that knowledge on the part of your players, but you're trying to be mysterious, so you're withholding, and you can't tell how much of it is just you withholding versus, you know what I mean, like dropping the right hints and stuff. So sometimes that's just a challenge. I find that pretty challenging to do.
Yeah. Cool. This last section, it may go longer here because I'm not sure. I'm still feeling out the time with the 30 minutes, but yeah. These questions, I wanted to add a little extra challenge too. So 4 words or less, and take time if you need it to kind of figure out what your answers are.
Okay.
But this first one, Bo, is for you.
4 words.
Did Bo have anything prepared if Nash's life partner had insisted on joining the gang?
No.
Really? That's good to know.
I mean, I only get 4 words, so. No, I did not. Next question.
All right, Scott, what is Nash's intelligence? Is it above 12? And if so, why do you play him not as smart?
So,
I only get 4 words for that.
So, I mean, okay. So it's no, it's no.
No, you're done.
Oh, yeah. I can't. Sorry. Ruined the thing already.
Next question.
I ruined it. Let me do four words.
It's two.
It's all by design.
That's it.
There you
go.
Nice. This one would hope personally prefer Tietkala keep growing as a home for the lost, or would she prefer remain mostly tiefling? And the only answer I have for that, I broke it. Mostly tiefling.
Mostly tiefling. Nice.
It's hard. Right, it's hard to remember that part. Yeah.
Does role playing make the game more fun for you?
Yes.
Absolutely yes. That's three words.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. Although I will... I broke it. Never mind.
No, go for it.
It's all by design.
Here is my only thought. I would say this. I really like in recent weeks or months how we have maintained the RP of it. And that is everything from the serious of it to the humor of it. Whatever we've done in the RP realm, we've stuck with that. But we have been less hard on ourselves about table talk and our willingness to sort of talk back and forth about what we can or can't do in between all of that. I think that's been a huge boost for me lately. I like being able to do that. And there was a sense early on that we just never wanted to break character ever. And if we did, we'd have to say, this is Scott speaking outside of the campaign. This is just me. This isn't Nash. Like, if I felt like I was having to do that a lot, or at least I felt my own pressure to do that. And I don't feel that as much anymore, and I like that. So it feels like a more balanced sort of experience that doesn't have any, you know, slippery slopes or anything.
Cool. Yes. And then do any of you guys watch other D&D streams like Critical Role or the C Team? I don't.
I watch a little Critical Role. I've never seen the C Team.
I pick up a few here and there. I watch Critical Role pretty regularly, and I've seen a few others, but that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, like to drop it on streams.
Yeah.
Harmon Quest.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I did do a bunch of Harmon Quest. It's funny because they are all, everything you mentioned are, you know, these are big ones, right? Like, these are, everybody knows who they are. They've got gigantic followings. Like, they're kind of a force into themselves. What I would like to really bump into, and I try to find them and I haven't been able to do it, is other shows that I think or that I hope are attempting to do what we're doing. We're not aiming for, certainly not aiming for Hollywood visuals on our presentation. We're not aiming for professional voice actors or any of the other things that make some of those other shows even better than they would be. We're just trying to convey the experience of here are friends doing a thing and it's really fun. And you should play too, and also give us a listen and see what you think. Like, I want to find more that I can listen to like that, and I have a hard time finding the ones that aren't. They're either the mega blockbusters or they're kind of bad. and I don't want to. It's hard for me to find the middle bit. If honestly, it's a lot like early podcasting back in the day when I was looking for.
It's the kid show geek aesthetic. Like,
right.
A lot of people in the geek culture. Doesn't matter. It's not just D&D. Have this like kids show way. Like Dr. Mustache is like a kids show. Just kind of adult.
Dr. Mustache.
You know, it's very like caricatured. It's people talk in these very exaggerated, phony ways that aren't really genuine. That it's just not an aesthetic I dig. So there are definitely D&D shows who do that, and I can't watch those. But I don't really watch that many, just because I do a lot of stuff for the week, and I don't have a lot of time for D&D streams.
Yeah, and I know I don't want to be influenced by it's hard because you want to be influenced, but at the same time you want to retain your own original development of the character and not necessarily what's been made popular by certain shows along the way.
That's a really good point.
It's one thing to be inspired, it's another thing to be influenced. And,
right.
Yeah.
And that's a hard line to walk, especially with Critical Role is season two. They started a little bit before us. Our episode numbers with their second season we're almost the same. Mm-hmm. So there's actually kind of a fun through line you can do of tracking both shows. And as a result, you know, we're pulling from similar monster challenge ratings and things like that. And there can be overlap like that. And it can be very easy to fall into influenced as opposed to inspired by or learning from and things like that.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
The last thing I'd say too is I do like to swing by streams and stuff though randomly. Just I go to the RPG channel on Twitch and I'll drop into streams. And that's always kind of fun because you get like humble. Like there's literally just, you know, it's a Sunday night at someone's house. They're all just sitting in their, you know, regular clothes. I don't know, just like these humble streams. I kind of find those fun to watch, to be honest.
Yeah, I should look for those more because that's kind of what I'm saying. I'd rather, I want to find stuff where, how do I put this? I want to find stuff where they're kind of a combination of what Bo is saying, which is this sort of laid back, hey, we just happen to be filming this thing we're doing, but also what Hope is saying, or sorry, Hope, Kristen is saying about it being your ability to maintain our originality doesn't get messed with by watching too many others or thinking that you're doing it wrong or wondering if they're doing it wrong or, you know, like all of that just gets in the way in my head. And I would rather just focus on like, I don't know.
Right. And that's such a scary thought that you could be doing something wrong in D&D when it's group storytelling, so you can't really be wrong, you know. You can argue, rules can be argued, sure, and just to make sure things are progressing fairly for everybody, but just that idea that you could be wrong in D&D is, it makes me very sad to think that that's even a possibility.
We don't have time in this show, but it would be an interesting conversation. I believe that role-playing games are the worst design games out of all games of all time.
You mean video games?
Part of the appeal. Yeah. That's why they're fun, but they're very poorly designed.
Yeah, well, they have to be open-ended.
By design. They're badly designed by design.
Yeah, that makes sense. They have to have that open-endedness, that sort of all those.
I mean, any
files.
Game where I'm like, you want to play a game? You're like, yeah, let's play a game. You want to spend time. Okay, and then you bring a stack of books that big. You're like, sweet, there's this content. And if it were anything else, you would be like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, it's,
weird, right? It's weird how that works. I'll tell you what else is weird. 30 minutes went really fast. And here we are at the end of another bonus episode. If you like this, then you already know, and you're getting it early. But if you do like this and you're like, man, I feel late. Well, don't feel late anymore. Go over to the website. Therewillbedungeons.com. Get some cool artwork in the mail. There's levels for all sorts of cool stuff, including this. Everybody who signs up gets the bonus show. All of you, a week early. So do that if you haven't already. And for those who get it early, thank you for supporting us. I think that's going to do it for us. For me, for Kyle, for John, for Kristen, and for Bo. We'll see you next time.